March 13th, 2018, Constituency Day, NCUC Part 1, Room 103B, 10:30 a.m.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bruna Santos. We are starting NCUC Constituency Day here at the Puerto Rico meeting. Can we start the recording, please? Perfect. So this will be our agenda for the whole day. We will have a meeting right now. Half of the meeting will be during this part of the morning. The second half will be after lunch break. For the first part of this meeting, we'll have some updates on different issues and subjects that NCUC has been working on. And on the second part of this meeting, we'll have more administrative and related issues to also the regional briefings from the EC and a statement from our Finance Committee representatives. So if we could start, maybe starting out with, we'll have Martin doing an update on the RPM's working group. So please, Martin.
Thank you, Bruna. This is Martin Silva. I don't know, should I do a like two words introduction on what it is, or just spill out? But okay, the RPM is the Right Protections Mechanisms, and it's a working group of the GNSO that is reviewing all the mechanisms that are there to protect trademarks. So we are discussing whether the process that was set forth to protect trademarks has been useful, effective. Do they have to be improved in any way? Were there maybe abused? What should we do in the future? And this group has divided its workload in two phases. The phase one is for mechanisms that apply only to new GTLDs, and the second phase is the mechanisms that apply to all generic domain names, which is only UDRP for the second phase. So, and in the first phase, then the reason to divide in those phases is so that we could arrive with a review process for the subsequent new rounds of new GTLDs. So we have the process reviewed for we wanted to launch the second round. Right now, we are finishing sort of the second phase. We already reviewed the trademark clearinghouse and all its insights parts of it. And we are in the URS. The URS is the Uniform Rapid Suspension process. And for those who don't know what URS is, URS is like a version of the UDRP that was created for the new GTLDs that is a faster, cheaper, less costly way to defend your trademark. On the contrary, your balance is also less powerful than UDRP. So you only get suspended, and there's rules around that. So it's like a way of complementing UDRP for this new world with new GTLDs. Specifically, the update is that in the review of this URS, we are, in all of the process, we sort of have the same mentality. Like I said before, is this process efficient in achieving its goal? Is it balanced? Has it been abused? And we go through the each rule trying to make a question on that rule to see if we need or not to do something with it. So in the URS, we did the same. Is this process balanced? How are the providers being educated? What is the registry's action in this? Or we go through every part of it. And the latest update is that a little bit like less than a month ago, NCC pulled a very strong argument to gather data on the issues, because we felt that we need a data-driven decision on whether the U.S. was working or not, was balanced or not, was being abused or not. And we sort of achieved it. We are now in the process of gathering data and doing questions specifically to provider registries, arbitrators, end users, or registrants, in this case, people that have a domain name. So that's the update. Right now, we are reviewing the U.S. We managed to get a moment to gather data specifically to then answer the questions if whether the URS has to be changed in any sort of way. And after this is supposed to end somewhere between this year and next year. We are going to enter into phase two, and that's going to be UDRP. So a lot of the work we are doing is also aimed to the phase two. if anyone have any question, I will be gladly to answer.
Thank you, Martin. I have a couple of questions just to follow up. For the people who are new here, first of all, what is the biggest challenge for NCUC in this specific aspect of our work? And second of all, if they want to jump in and help, where is the most efficient place for them to jump in and help?
Yes. Martin, for the record, I would say the challenge of NCUC is the balance. We are trying to bring balance to a process that is protecting trademarks. What is the issue or concern we might have? That trademarks can be used in a way that goes over the legitimate and fair use of users of the domain name space. Like using a trademark to take away a domain that has my own name. I have a legitimate claim on having a domain name with my name if I'm using it in good faith. So I would say that the concern of NCUC is to try to have a balanced process, a fair process of trademark protections. That's the challenge. So that the process is not abused against what end users' legitimate claims may have. The second challenge is the amount of participation. It's a group where every call we have 50 people, and we have only probably 4 NCUC or NCSG users. That means we are greatly outnumbered, and we're doing our best to try to work together. I mean, Claudio has been working with us, Luis has been working with us, Michael has been working with us, but it's still a very, very small group, and there's a lot of work to be done. So if anyone wants to join, there's a lot of things to do and to participate with, and the ones that are involved, we are very open, we are very willing to mentor, to explain, to... we want to work together. That's the thing. We're looking for people to work together with us. So the place is open.
Hi, Michael Karaniklis for the record. Just to add to those excellent remarks and that introduction to the theme. It's can be a challenging area to engage in because it is heavily technical, partly because it's heavily technical and partly because... the debate can be very intense at times, probably the most intense back and forth that you'll find that I experience at ICANN in the areas that I currently engage in. But at the same time, that can be fun also, the adversarial nature of it and the fact that you're called on to defend a position can be good. And I also do want to emphasize what was mentioned about how, about the members that are involved that are very happy to help out. So it is a challenging area to engage. It is highly technical, but it's also a great opportunity to learn about that area. And the people that are engaged, I know for myself, Martin, Luis, certainly Kathy, are super happy to offer any kind of mentorship or help or support or guidance in the issues that we're going to be talking about for the meetings. So numbers are really important. As Martin also mentioned, we're nearly always outnumbered. So it's very important to get more people out. And please don't hesitate to approach any of us if you want to get more involved, and we'd be very happy to help.
Thank you very much, Michael. We'll proceed to the updates on the next working groups. And one initial question, do we prefer that we do presentations on every single one of the teams and then we jump to Q&A? Or do we think that this is working? Maybe have some 5 minutes questions after every single presentation.
Hi, Louise, for the record. Sorry for the... I got a little bit of cold, but yeah. I think we should proceed that way. I think maybe the particular group presents and then we just do a very brief Q&A. Not necessarily 5 minutes, but whatever comes up. But yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Lou. I guess then we can move to Stephanie.
Sorry, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, and I apologize for being late. We were staggering over from the other meetings. I am supposed to give an update on auction proceeds. I regret to report that I've been conflicted out of several of the meetings on auction proceeds lately, and I have been so busy preparing all our GDPR comments that I haven't really checked in. Quite frankly, we're not moving very fast in the auction proceeds working group. The last I heard, we were still debating about whether or not we were going to allow the board to dive into the auction proceeds to top up the reserve fund, which is a very real problem. We had a long discussion over getting outside expertise from those who professionally run endowments and funds. And I can't honestly tell you where we are on this. If there's someone else who wants to take over this committee, I am débordé, as we say in the other language in Canada. It is just too much right now with the GDPR things going on. So, and I don't see the auction proceeds moving too quickly. We also have Yulf on this committee, so I have hated to abandon him. But if there is interest, we might think about replacing me and having somebody else. Thanks.
We have a question from remote participation from Renata, but it was on the RPM's team, so should something on this. Yeah, we're moving this question towards the end of it. Is it okay, Maria? Thank you.
Actually, Stephanie, I'd like to ask you a question, and it's also about the fact that some issues are sometimes overshadowed by other issues because of their urgency. So in your experience at ICANN, how would you suggest newcomers to deal with such a thing when they're so inspired and passionate about a specific thing, but then again, something overshadows it and another priority actually has to go through? How would you actually advise us to go through when something like this happens?
Well, I have to say, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I got interviewed for the ICANN history, or the NCSG history project the other day. And, you know, the question was, what would you advise newcomers to do coming to ICANN? And the advice is go with what you're passionate about. I'm not quite as passionate about auction proceeds as I am about GDPR, and I feel like I'm needed more there. The only real reason that I put my hand up and agreed to do auction proceeds is they're looking for qualifications. You're supposed to have expertise in managing budgets, doing grants and contributions, that kind of background. And I have, done that. I've managed programs and, it's not the same as, I wasn't running the Bill Gates Trust, but... this isn't, quite frankly, the same amount of money. It's a couple hundred million. It's still a big chunk of money, but, so at this point, I really think I'm better used elsewhere. Not that I think they want me to leave, because budget experience is very, very useful here. But we need to replace me with someone who meets the criteria that they were looking for back in the beginning. So, but I would continue with advice to newcomers. Pick something you're passionate about and follow it closely. And, the key is to just ask the folks who've maybe been at it longer good questions, And if you're reading the documents and following, you're going to have good questions. And we sure want to help you get up to speed, because this is really exhausting. We were talking in the GNSO. There's a really good paper that everybody should read, I think, that has been discussed at the intersessional on staff, the PDP burnout, the problem, the overloading right now. And that's well worth grappling with. So does that answer your question? Yeah. Thanks.
Sorry, it's also good to note that Aidan is going to be talking more about the FY19 budget and operation plan later on in the day as well.
Bruna, for the record, I guess I'll be willing to help you with auctions proceeds also.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Thank you. Just a volunteer note. Does anybody have any other questions, or should we move to the next subject? I'll just check if we have anything from remote. No.
Okay, thanks. Rafik speaking. No, I just want to support was what Stephanie was saying. For newcomer in particular, it's important just to focus on one issue that you can spend your time and try to understand and try to scatter your effort in so many areas. It can be take so much time. Just your attention, your time are kind of scarce. So do something, but do it well. Just focus on one thing. That's all. That's what I want to say.
Thanks, Rafiq. Moving on, then, we'll have an update by Dina on the E-Team initiative. Are you ready to do it, Dina? Thank you.
And Dina Sovyalkin for the record. So just a short update, something I already talked about with NCUC Executive Committee. We have an E-team, right? Anyone here who is on the E-team? Okay. So, well, it's quite nice that we are independent from the ICANN structure. The IT stuff, the mailing lists, things are working, but only a few handful of people are behind it, like Tapani, for instance, and have been doing it for quite a long time. So bringing new people into the E-team and sharing that load would be important. Yeah. So all the newcomers are very welcome to talk about that. And just very briefly, there has been a question raised about using Google Documents and relying on Google quite heavily. Also, a question has been raised with the E-team whether some documents we have require the privileged access, as in some documents should be seen by a number of people before, for instance, they are released and so on. And having an intranet of our own would allow for that, and having a bit of a better structure and us running our own services, which is possible. But I think what needs to happen next is that we reflect on that and we send it out to the NCUC list for an open discussion and see what the input from the community is. And that is how we shall proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dina. Louise and then Aiden.
Thank you, Louise, for the record. I was just going to ask you, Dina, to just, I see some new faces in the room, so I would just ask you to just give a brief overview of what the E-team does and what is the focus, and just to, so that newcomers and people who are might be interested in joining can have a clearer view about the E-team. Thanks.
And Dina Solway for the record, using another microphone. So E-team, in short, does technical backup for the NCUC and some awesome sysadmining. Thank you.
Thanks. Aiden Ferdlin for the record. And I appreciate this is an NCUC meeting, but at the NCSG level, in the policy committee, we've been experimenting with Slack. So I just wanted to sort of pass that feedback on, that perhaps that is something that the NCUC E-team might also want to look at our implementation of Slack so far, see if there might be some synergies that we can get together. Because we have been using that as sort of an early document management control tool. But of course, we are also taking all of our work to our archive mailing list, because while we do use Google Docs, ultimately our outputs are public anyway, and we do develop them in an open manner. So we haven't, at least if speaking for myself, I don't see a huge issue with using Google Docs for that reason. That
I do.
Okay, and that's fine. But we can have differences of opinion on this, and I realize why. You know, the danger of being stuck in an ecosystem dominated by certain market players, but ultimately the documents that we are producing, at least at the NCSG level, are public anyway, and they are developed in a public manner for all of our members to be able to see. So appreciate, you know, Google Docs is not available in every jurisdiction. I remember in the past we've had members in China who have had goodies with Google Docs, and we try to find ways around that. But I just wanted to pass that feedback on, mainly about Slack, that just an FYI, that we are piloting this at the moment to see how it goes. Thanks.
To respond to Aidan, your Slack suggestion is noted. It's in my mind, it's somewhat separate from the internet, but whatever community has consensus on, we got your back, we will make it happen. And what comes to the documents and document sharing, a solution which works for the most people, as free, as open as possible, is the objective, and we will take all the input we can get on the best working solution. Thank you.
This is Bruna for the record. We have on the queue Steph, Rafiq, and then David, but Renata is also joining us remotely right now, and she would like to address some of the questions as well. So, Renata, if you're ready to speak, the floor is yours. Renata? I guess we could
take it. Hello? Good. I guess you can hear me now, right? Renata here?
Yes, Renata, we can hear you.
I would like to thank Bina for the update. So, yes, VTeam has a list, but I will say that this is a team with some veterans that take care of NCC website infrastructure. So it's not really a team for tools or outreach or plans like these. We have been discussing the internet, but all the discussions go through the e-team list to the participants there. A while ago, we had a reconfirmation of participants. And we hope to bring this discussion back to ETN list to bring it the next steps. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Renata. So moving on with the queue, Stephanie?
Yes, Stephanie Perrin for the record. And this may not be appropriate for your committee. I'm just putting it out there. The other day in the GNSO, I think we reiterated the suggestion that really, to help our newcomers get up to speed, we need the website and the archival capability of ICANN upgraded. Anybody ever tried finding a document on the ICANN website? Good luck. Good luck. Search tool doesn't work. You know, I think there's consensus. We all give up and we go to Google. I hate to, but so we have recommended in the past that they hire a librarian. I know David was on this years ago. Remember, we were pushing for the librarian. They hired the librarian. Then the librarian left, and they've cut that position. They're hiring new people. We need a blessed librarian archivist. They're cheap compared to what we spend on staff, and I'm not taking a shot at staff. We want good staff, but we really need help because I need to be able to go to them and say, I want to find all the records on this topic. Guide me. And we don't have that. Nobody can guide you. So would you take that on? The only geekish angle here is the failure of the search tool.
I don't really think that's an A-team kind of deal.
Okay, can we have a library team?
This is Bruna for the record. Only a short intermission. On the EC case, we have been trying to assemble a syllabus or maybe a repository, a place that we can list all the links to all of our documents, and we've been trying to do the librarian job so far.
Big job. Louise, for the record, it has been a Google Docception because we have been using a Google Doc to try to catalog all of the documents we have at the current moment and some past documents so we can have an archive of these things instead of just the mailing list, which can be very confusing if you're trying to find a document that has been referenced to in a while ago. So I think that is, even though we don't have a librarian department, I think that it is definitely a demand. Thanks.
moving on to dinner.
Your suggestion is noted, and whatever concretely you need or the suggestions, we will take over to it and we'll back you up.
Thank you, Dina. Then moving on the queue is Rafiq right now.
Okay, thanks. Rafiq speaking. Okay, sometimes it's important maybe to have the historical background. So when the A-team, all these teams were created during Bidrake term. And for this particular case, is that to have like more people doing the kind of the maintenance and to keep NCSC website running. So we had that that accounting only with also domain name and so on. So that was the focus in the first place. So I think now you are trying to extend to have more role. That's okay. But first, when I hear about any solution, we start first to define what our needs and requirements before jumping to specific solution. That's always my... It's why you need this in first place, what you want to achieve. Because one of problem, if like even hearing about Slack and so on, we tried before Rocket Chat. We tried that experiment. And it didn't last because we need in many times to get... it's user acceptance. You have to get people to join and to participate. And also there is that problem of maintenance. Don't think that now we have people that can keep things running for now. Who will do that in 5 years? Who will do that? And what is the cost? So we need to, when we make a plan, it's something that's sustainable, that we can keep it, that it can be updated and so on. But for example, even now for the website itself, you have to do maintenance like to upgrade the server, to upgrade the WordPress and so on and so on and so on. So this should be needed carefully. Also with regard to the solution, I'm kind of neutral, agnostic. I don't have an ideological approach. I mean, Google Doc or whatever. It's about sustainability. If we select something that it's accessible to everyone and that we can keep it and maintain for the future. So regarding also about the document access, I think for privileged access, it's the exception. Because by GNS operating rules and the expectation of transparency, like our mailing list, everything, it should be transparent. We are doing that, and we keep that. That's just our point. I know that maybe it's not effective because it show all our discussion, but we have that that requirement to follow. So I think maybe for the E-teams, now it's kind of maybe collect all the kind of what people think as needs, or their requirement, so we can then start from to think what we can do. And also you have the constraint and time and resources to maintain whatever solution. And let's see what can happen. I also want really that you focus on a specific area. Don't try to overstretch. I'm kind of worried if you will have to fix ICANN website or something. I mean, just let's focus on our needs, our resources. And it's important that we did that to be independent from ICANN. People maybe don't understand why, but let me explain something. For example, we are using the Wiki Confluence page, the Confluence. It's a nice platform, but we don't have control on it. We cannot add people by ourselves. We cannot take backup by ourselves, and so on and so on. It's the ICANN IT team that do that, and we have to make requests. And so also, if we have like a mailing list at ICANN, we won't have the kind of moderator permission by ourselves. We have to depend on ICANN stuff. That keeping the independence was important for us, for the website, for listserv, and so on. So I think this is something just to have in mind in whatever we come with. Okay.
Rafiq makes excellent points. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dina and Rafiq. Moving on to David, just so we can...
I think it is important the E-team remains pretty focused on what Rafiq says, which is providing electronic resources for that NCUC owns and controls and is able to and is able to keep them updated. We don't duplicate the work of ICANN staff. We don't even, and it shouldn't even particularly be about lobbying or anything like that, ICANN stuff, unless it's on just occasionally liaising on very specific questions. Not even that, really. So it is a It's not a super active group. If you are someone who has some technical skills, and we don't need deep technical skills. We occasionally do need those, and people like Tarpani and myself who've been have worked as sysadmins can roll up our sleeves on occasion. But mostly most of what we did last year was about the website. Anyone who sort of understands how websites work and WordPress and so on is very welcome. It's a good way to just contribute, help out, do a few things. We could certainly use a few hands just basically to deal with things like website content and things like that. The question of do we have our own chat channel and other tools like that has come up. And as was said, we tried Rocket Chat. It didn't work. We just didn't get enough adoption. We may try some other tools as we keep going on. There are alternatives to using Google Docs. We could, install and set them up if there was enough demand and people thought we were going to use them. And it might be quite a good idea to, host our own, own cloud or something like that, so we can have our own document platform. NCSG does use Trello as a project management tool. We could perhaps use that for NCUC as well. That might be really helpful. But on the whole, we don't want to spend a lot of time duplicating stuff ICANN already does, and we don't want this team to turn into, grow its scope. So. But please feel free to contribute, and keeping our website and some of our materials up to date is something that is really helpful. And I think a lot of the E-team members are not really focused on, so that'd be great.
Thank you very much, David. This is Bruna for the record again. So we're moving on to our next agenda item, which is a presentation by our NCUC mentees for this meeting, who are Olga and Pharrell, and Aiden is also helping us with this presentation.
I'm not sure how I'm helping, but feel free to let me know.
It's actually about RDS, I believe. Like, if you could give us a brief about what's happening in the RDS PDP, and so then the mentees can actually ask questions and present.
Sure. So my understanding from Renata was that I was meant to be silent, and that the questions were going to come to me to answer. But if there are
for the newcomers, can you open the acronym?
Well, the acronym is disputed. So it is either the Registration Data Service or the Registration Directory Service, and there is some politics behind that. I don't know if it's particularly useful to go into an update as to where this particular working group is at. What might be more useful to think about is the broader issue of, so what is the RDS? Remember, I'm going to use that one acronym because it is disputed as to what it stands for. Broadly, we're speaking about the WHOIS service, which is essentially a decentralized database of containing the name and some other personal data of the registrar of a domain name.
Sorry, Aiden, can you speak closer to the mic?
Yeah, sure. Hopefully you can hear me better now. So broadly, when we speak about the RDS working group, we're speaking about what would be the replacement to what is WHOIS at the moment, and WHOIS is not an acronym. It is simply the directory service that contains the name of the registrant for a domain name, amongst other details. But the more exciting area of focus has not been on this working group, because this working group is moving at a glacial pace. The more exciting focus, I think, has been to do with how do we get with the GDPR, the General European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, which is in effect, but enforcement begins in May of this year, how do we ensure that WHOIS, the current service, is compliant with the GDPR? So a lot of the conversations in the community have been revolving around that. So there are roughly 70 days before the GDPR comes into effect. The registrars have complex systems that they will need to reconfigure in order to be compliant with the law. And ICANN has proposed a series of models for achieving compliance. But these are still at a very high level. Nothing is finalized. I like how Stephanie described it this morning in our meeting with the board. She said, jokingly, that she calls it the spaghetti model. You throw it on the wall, see what sticks. And that seems to be what is happening at the moment. There's not a whole lot of progress, but broadly, there are we are at the stage of assessing these models, seeing what we can live with, what we can't live with, and what we're happy with. And there are parts of them that are okay. But I'm going to pause there. I think it's perhaps too much detail to actually go down into the models themselves, though we can do that if you like. But if you have any questions, I'm happy to field them. Thanks.
Okay, this is Brenda again for the record, and I apologize, and I got confused with this whole agenda. It was Olga and Pharrell who were supposed to do the presentation, and we got confused, so apologies for that. So maybe Olga, if we can.
Yeah, thank you, Bruna. I will give just a few probably introductory points because Pharrell is working on that much more than me, so he can add probably more flesh into that skeleton from which I will start. So currently the RDS working group has been working on two key questions. The first one is what are the fundamental requirements for GTLD registration data and directory services? And the second one is a new policy framework and the next generation RDS needed to address these requirements, or we can follow with what we have regarding the WHOIS. So the working group is currently working to reach initial rough consensus agreement on key concepts related to working group's charter questions concerning RDS uses and purposes. Also, data elements, privacy, and access. It was mentioned during the working group's discussions that it is very important to differentiate between the purpose of individual registration data elements and the RDS itself. And when we talk about the purpose of GTLD registration data, it is to provide a record of domain name registration, while a purpose of RDS is to facilitate dissemination of GTLD registration data of record, such as domain names and domain contracts. As of March this year, 49 initial points of rough consensus had been reached already, but... what I was a bit confused that there is a lot of discussion happening about what is the legitimate purpose itself and what should be considered as the legitimate purpose. And the most striking point for me was that, which was made that we probably still need to identify what is the ICANN's mandate, but which is kind of strange for me. We all know what is ICANN's mandate, but what we need to do with all these legitimate purposes is just to make sure that they fall within the framework of the ICANN's mandate, which is just to provide the security and stability of the internet. But still, somehow the discussions are moving also in that direction. So. The discussions are also happening about what kind of data elements should be open for the general public and what should be opened by filing the request, and also that there might be some confusions because not always the person who is holding the account is the one to whom belongs the domain name. That's why it also may create some kind of confusions in this regard. And they also raised the point about the reputation issue with regard to the domain name history, and there was some kind of the analogies made according to real estate registries that probably the one on RDS should be the same, but the logic is not also that much clear in this regard. So I believe this is just the first phase happening of all these discussions, and... Yeah, I will also give the floor to Pharrell to add on that.
Thank you, Pharrell, for the record. I don't know, Bruna, if time's left again, but I think that Aidan and Olga gave a good summary If time left, maybe I could just give a quick update on the progress of the working group. So,
yeah, this is really, yeah, that would be good, and then we can jump on into Q&A like really quickly.
Okay. Thank you. So I think that since I can see the working group has focused on defining potentially legitimate purpose for processing registration data and the data element that required for each purpose and potential user of that data. So what has been done is several drafting teams were formed to flesh out proposed definition for the RDS purposes. And this same drafting team were reactivated again to address question about entities to be identified or contracted for each purpose as input to ICANN 61. And this is being done because ICANN really does not know by the moment the legal purpose of who is, and it is taking us a long time to try to figure out there what we can do. So we have now 7 contenders for legal purpose of who is, but the NCUC, sorry, I just get a moment, and those 7 contenders are like drafting teams. We have 7, and the first one is technical issue resolution and academic or public interest DNS research. We agree on this one. Drafting team 2 regard domain name control and individual internet use. We also agree on this one. And drafting team 3, domain name certification, we actually question this one. Drafting team 4, business domain name purchase sale, we question this one also. Regulatory or contractual enforcement, we are questioning this one too. Legal action, questioning also. And drafting team 7 on criminal investigation on DNS abuse. So I will not talk for the other subgroups, but Cathy Kleiman and I are part of the drafting team 5. And our assignment was to re-examine the output of the regulatory action and ICANN contractual compliance purposes in order to answer 3 main questions. The questions are, who associated with the domain name registration need to be identified and or contacted for each of the purposes? And what's the objective achieved by identifying and or contacting each of those entities? And what might be expected of that entity with regard of the domain name? I will not go into detail of the discussion that went around this, but the thing is, ICANN is not a contractual compliance, and it's not necessary for ICANN to do that. The function itself of compliance is necessary, but we question why ICANN contractual compliance involving contract between ICANN and its contracted parties of registry and registrar could probably implicate registrant who are not part of the contract between ICANN and play no contractual part in compliance. And that goes for the same thing as regulation. Why would ICANN allow to collect data for regulatory purpose while ICANN is not a regulatory entity? So actually, this is the discussion going on. But within each subgroup, many people are advocating for the fact that those purposes actually that has been suggested are only possible purposes but not definitive. So time will come according to the working group timeline frame to discuss about the legitimacy of those purposes which are being proposing by now. So that's the end of my presentation. So if you just have any question, there are materials to share for people who are new to know more about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Farrell. We're taking David's question and then we're moving on because we still have a lot of issues.
not really a question, but it's commenting. I'm also involved in this group as the I'm part of the leadership team of that group, so that it has one vice chair from each stakeholder group. So I represent the non-commercial stakeholders on that group. It means while I participate in the discussion of the group, I'm a bit more focused on process rather than the leadership role is focused on process. While Stephanie in particular is doing, and Aidan are doing heroic work and keeping up the bulk of argument on that group. I just wanted to say that this is a special rule for PDPs, which is that anyone can join at any time. It's not how it normally works in PDPs. You want to jump in, we'll help you do that. We're kind of constrained in our charter not to use subteams too much, but actually we found we're much more productive when we do, so we're going to try and work out how to do that. I've been involved in drafting team. I run drafting team 3, which deals with domain name certification, which we would have thought was one of the really controversial ones, but somehow we managed to find some controversy. This is an interesting working group to be involved. It's huge and complicated, so it's a bit dumping in at the deep end, but there are plenty of people who will be more than happy to give you a little bit of direction and help and mentoring. This is a vital one where all of the people who are involved in it are a little bit stretched. We would love to have a little bit more help. And we do have a session on this tomorrow, which I would encourage you to come along to. And you can see us discuss, for example, the work of Working Team 5, I think, is scheduled for tomorrow. You can learn all about that. So please, this is a good one. If you're interested in, you know, finding a bit about policy, this is a good one.
Please, Steph, go ahead.
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I'm just wondering if there are enough people interested in RDS that we could have a little cluster in the morning prior to the meeting, maybe? Or we're not all in the same hotels and we get free breakfast and we all want to eat our free breakfast, right? So, you know, that's really important. But maybe after breakfast and before the meeting, because there's a lot of really embedded issues here. Those were great summaries. Thank you very much. I couldn't have done that. And as you know, I'm in there fighting every day. But there's things that we need to kind of brief on. So if anybody's interested, let's figure out a time. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Stephanie. We'll have Aiden on the queue and...
Thanks for that summary. And I was just actually going to mention something that Stephanie has been raising in this working group, that the process that we've been following lately seems to be quite backwards, in that rather than focusing on data minimization, which is sort of a basic principle of data protection law, we've been focusing on sort of data maximalization and looking at all of these really broad categories of how can we justify the status quo? How can we, because some random third-party service has built their business on the back of X, how can we ensure that they have continued access to whatever they need? And that has been, you know, you used the term before, you know, legitimate interest. I think there's some disagreement, at least amongst the NCSG, as to whether or not some of these uses have been put forward are really a legitimate use of Whois, or perhaps a misuse of the service in the first place. So I just wanted to put that out, that ICANN creates policy and contractual compliance models for the domain name system, and that it should really be starting there when it comes to finding the purpose for collecting data in the first place, and not thinking about this wider ecosystem of who are all of the random actors that would like to use the RDS for a purpose that is not necessarily in line with ICANN's mission. And for that reason, that's why there's been some pushback on some of these, as Pharrell noted.
Thank you very much. Dina, I'm sorry, we're moving on with the agenda. I'm just afraid that we don't get to have a moment for every single one of our topics. And then if we have 10 minutes in the end, we'll go back to all of the underlying issues. So moving on to the new Utah D Supro, we'll have Robin giving a short update on the question.
Hi, this is Robin Gross. You want a short update? There are 5 work tracks. Sorry. No. So let me just go back a little bit. What this is, the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group. So when we came up with the rules for the policies for the new GTLD program about 10 years ago or so now, you know, we had a set of principles and a set of recommendations, and then they were implemented to varying degrees and you know, applications came in and they were evaluated and new GTLDs were issued. And so this particular working group is sort of now trying to take a look backwards at what happened and were the policy recommendations and principles, were they right? Did we get them right? Were they implemented properly? And were there problems? Are there ways that we need to adjust the proposal for the next time, assuming we're going to have a next time? So this particular working group is really large because, as I said, there are five different work tracks within it, and each one is sort of focused on a different issue, sub-issue within the new GTLD subsequent procedures. So work track one deals with the overall process, the support and the outreach, things like the clarity of the application process, application fees, application queuing, support for applicants from developing countries. There's quite a long list of issues that they're working on in Work Track 1. Now, Work Track 2 deals with the legal and regulatory framework, so it has a lot to do with the intellectual property rights protections mechanisms that were created in this last round and looking at those. Also things like what is the global public interest and what do we do with so-called closed generics. Contractual compliance is a big part of that as well, the reserved names list, trademark clearinghouse issues. These are all in Work Track 2. Work Track 3, of which I'm a co-chair, deals with the string contention, objections, dispute processes. So we're looking at the new GTLD applicant freedom of expression principles, string similarity issues, objections and how they were handled, the different accounting mechanisms that we have here at ICANN and how they apply to the new GTLD process, and do we need perhaps a very specific accountability mechanism just for the new GTLD program. And also one of the big and more contentious issues in Work Track 3 is the community applications. And, you know, now we're grappling with how do we define a community and what kind of rights and privileges do we want to give to that community. So these are the string contention issues in Work Track 3. And then if you go to Work Track 4, this is the work track that's dealing with internationalized domain names, universal acceptance, the technical and the operational concerns from the last round, name collisions, security and stability, those kinds of issues. And then Work Track 5, which came along a little bit later in the process, it deals with what's called geographic names, geo names. And so this one was created just a few months ago. So it's a little, like I say, it's a little bit behind in terms of when it was created and how it will be, when it will complete its work, and even how it is sort of managed. Because while this is a GNSO PDP, other parts of the community were particularly interested in this issue, geographic names, the GAC and the CCNSO. So Work Track 5 actually has four different co-chairs, each from the different parts of the organization, from ALAC and from GAC and from the GNSO and the CCNSO. So it's being run a little bit differently in that sense, but it is still in part of the GNSO's PDP process. So that's just a very, very brief overlay of what the different issues are that we're working on in Work Track or in the new GTLD subsequent procedures. And I should also mention tomorrow morning at 8:30, we've got a meeting that focuses exclusively on Work Track 5, the geographic names issue. This is, again, one of the more hotly contested issues. And so if you're interested in that issue, please come tomorrow morning at 8:30. I know one of the concerns that our group has with that particular issue has to do with how freedom of expression will be treated up against these newly created sort of geographic name rights, which don't exist in law or in policy frameworks, but Work Track 5 is working to create these sorts of rights. So it's really worth paying attention to. Now, in terms of the time frame where we are in the process here, we are expecting Work Tracks 1 through 4 to complete the initial report within the next month. And then that will go out for public comment in April. And that will be out for public comment until June, thereabouts. And then we'll go back and we'll take a look at what the comment said and perhaps revise some of the provisions that are in the initial report, depending upon the feedback that we get. And then we'll have a final report for work tracks 1 through 4, probably around the third quarter of 2018. Now, as I mentioned before, work track 5 is a little bit behind the other work tracks. So this is one, again, that it's just getting started, and so it's not at all too late to join and to have a significant contribution that you can make in there. That one we expect the final report to come out towards the end of the fourth quarter 2018, or even the first quarter of 2019. And so and then the two reports will be merged together and will be delivered to the council and be delivered to the board subsequent to that for final approval. So that's sort of where we are in the time frame, what's coming up, and what the general issues are that the different work tracks are working on in this working group. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask them now or just kind of, you know, come talk to me in the hallway on any of these issues if you want to get engaged on them. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Robin. We have staff and Rafik then.
I'm just wondering, Robin, Stephanie Barron for the record, have you any thoughts on how we're going to manage the comments? Because you're going to be busy and we're not going to ask you to draft them all. Or are we, gang? I don't know. But that's a lot of heavy lifting there. And if it's June, was it June you said? Yeah, that's coming up real quick. Mm-hmm.
It is. Yeah, and I don't think I'm the appropriate person to be drafting them. I'll particularly work track 3 because I'm the co-chair of it. And the other ones I'm not really is involved in, so I'm also, you know, not quite deep in the weeds on those. But I certainly know what the issues are, and I can, if we have people in this room or our membership generally who is interested in working on these comments, I would be more than happy to work with a group and, you know, perhaps provide some key points or issues that I think we need to make in the comments. And then, you know, if we've got a group of drafters working together, I think that's probably the way to go on that.
Thank you very much, Robin. I had tried my way through CC2. I can definitely try through this next round. And if anyone else is willing also to join, I can help form this team. So moving on to Rafik.
Okay, thanks for speaking. It seems that my question was answered partly. So because as for the NCNG policy committee, so it's good to have heads up when this is coming. And usually we're not going to ask you to draft. But I think if it's possible, if you point out or highlight some issue, because 4 work tracks too much. And I think the list of issue handled is also too long. It's quite long laundry list. So I can see that Bruna is volunteering now. But yes, when the public comment will be issued, we will do the call of volunteers as usual and so on. So we can ask you that time. Yeah. So if we can get heads up, that would be really helpful.
And again, this is, you know, basically 1 month from now that I expect the public comment period to be opened on this. So in terms of our time frame, that's where we are.
Thank you very much, Robin. Do we have any other questions or can we move on? Is the working group concluding by Barcelona meeting, or is it like the working group will be finishing its work by the Barcelona meeting, right?
For the initial reports for work tracks 1 through 4, yes. But then we'll need to take a look at what the public comments said and then go back and perhaps revise some of the things that we said in the initial report. So we'll sort of be on a pause while we're waiting for public comment, and then we'll get back to work in terms of going reviewing and analyzing the public comment.
Thank you very much. So moving on the agenda, we will have Colleen now with the presentation on the CCWP on human rights.
Just a comment before we go. For the newcomers, please do ask questions if you have any. It's really important that you just ask questions to those focal points in our PDPs and working groups. Yeah.
Thanks. This is Colleen Curry, and I'm here to talk to you about the Cross-Community Working Party on ICANN and Human Rights. So it's the CCWPHR, and I'll just call it the CCWP. So the CCWP kicked off in 2014. This is actually our 10th ICANN, so that's a success already. And it's a bit of a point of inflection for the CCWP right now. We've had a change in leadership recently. I am now co-chairing with my co-chair down there at the end of the table, Michael Karanikolas. And to stress to you this point of inflection, I'm going to start on a little bit of a journey. So in 2016, a new core value was added to the ICANN bylaws, which is that ICANN will respect internationally recognized human rights as required by applicable law. There's a bit more text that follows that kind of limits that to the scope of the ICANN mission, et cetera. And immediately after this bylaw, there was another one that was passed that said that this core value would have no force or effect until a framework of interpretation had been developed. So in Workstream 2 of the Cross-Community Working Group on ICANN's Accountability, which I think Rafiq might be talking about afterwards, so I'll try not to step on your toes, there was a human rights subgroup that was dedicated to developing this framework of interpretation and considerations document. So that work kicked off in July 2016, and it carried on through to the end of last year. Workstream 2 is still ongoing because a couple of the other subgroups haven't finalized their final recommendations. But the human rights subgroup, we're done. The framework of interpretation has been drafted and agreed upon in consensus in the subgroup and then consensus in the plenary. So the human rights bylaw is incoming. So just to say a couple high points of the framework of interpretation, it is saying that in order to operationalize this bylaw, it is up to each supporting organization and advisory committee to develop their own policies and frameworks to fulfill the core value, to respect internationally recognized human rights. So the framework of interpretation cited the United Nations guiding principles on business and corporate responsibility as a potentially useful guide in this development, and that SOs and ACs could potentially consider defining and incorporating human rights impact assessments into their respective policy development processes in order to fulfill this core value. So let's get back to the Cross-Community Working Party on ICANN and Human Rights. Like I said, we've been active in the ICANN community for several years. We've produced several papers mapping out the human rights effects of ICANN policies and procedures related to human rights more broadly or specific human rights concerns arising from PDPs or GTLD subsequent procedures, etc. And then at the last ICANN meeting, we also produced an initial sketch for incorporating a human rights impact assessment into the policy development processes of the generic name supporting organization. So, like I said before, the ICANN human rights core value hasn't yet been kicked into effect, although the framework of interpretation has been developed. It first needs to be approved by the board. So we expect that that will probably happen later this year, and then it'll be time for the rubber to meet the road and for the SAs and ACs to begin developing their mechanisms for compliance. So enter the CCWP, the Cross-Community Working Party on ICANN and Human Rights. So this body was chartered to map the human rights effects of ICANN policies and procedures, to raise awareness, to serve as a forum for these kinds of discussions, and then to provide information, suggestions, and recommendations for SOs, ACs, and the broader community on how what type of procedures and mechanisms can be incorporated for these chartering organizations to fulfill the human rights bylaw. Obviously, this is a very relevant conversation, and this is a very relevant group at this point of time. So talking about the way forward, it is a big question mark on exactly what shape these kinds of mechanisms will take. So right now what we need is we need more people to come in and to help us not only explore the different procedural aspects of supporting organizations and advisory committees to be able to better understand what shape such a human rights impact assessment or mechanism could take, but to also continue exploring the ongoing human rights impacts of policies and procedures as a part of due diligence. So that's a basic overview. If you guys have any questions, then feel free to ask.
Thank you very much, Colleen. Do we have any questions? Also, any questions from the remote participation, we'll be willing to take them. Stephanie, go ahead, please.
I'm sorry to do so much talking, but I just wanted to stress the importance, like we were in a frenzy to get a comment on the new GDPR model out over the last 2 days, and we kind of wedged your a comment basically for you guys to try and leverage that, you know, that implementation structure into our assessment of the GDPR, because it's a good way to trial that, because the risk that we're afraid of is we'll never get around to doing that infrastructure, and therefore it won't happen. And, you know, that's ICANN for you folks. You know, we can talk about that for hours. But so let us know if you wanna, if you wouldn't mind looking at that paragraph in the GDPR comment, because we need to reinforce each other in these efforts. And we can, you know, in our next comment, we can do it the way you want. But we were kind of stuck for time, and we thought of it the last minute. So, and you weren't there, so, you know.
Just to make this a bit of a conversation for a minute, I think that it is really great that we kind of leverage this hot button issue to start pointing towards the direction of human rights impact assessments. And then ultimately it would be great to leverage this kinds of attention into incorporating it as a mechanism and kind of institutionalizing such procedures to make sure that moving forward, when we have these kind of ad hoc things, and particularly in the more formalized policy development processes, that this becomes a natural, incorporated, agreed upon, and implemented element.
Yes, and we'll have a further dialogue on this, because I want to use it. There's a piece in the GDPR that says, well, you have to comply with GDPR, but it's optional for all the other countries and their data protection laws. Hello? Since when is law optional? And if you subject the whole, whatever, the spaghetti, the calzone, whatever, to a human rights impact assessment, fundamental fairness, let alone, you know, your charter rights and your legal rights that should be enforced in the other countries, will lead you to the conclusion that it's not optional to enforce the law there. So I want to make sure that we agree on how we're interpreting that framework, because you might not want to go there. That's how I'm doing it. So we'll keep close on that. But I think it's really going to be useful. And we'll just start using it as if it were there, because the whole concept is not new. I mean, anybody who's done RIAs and HRIAs before knows how to do this. ICANN doesn't. Thanks.
So as a little side note, one of the side projects that we've been doing in addition to this cross-community, the work with the CCWP, is trying to hone and develop this model for applying human rights impact assessments as they exist more formally established within the corporate social responsibility and UNGP community. There's quite a lot of literature on human rights impact assessments, but not necessarily as they apply to ICTs and more specifically to the DNS. That's a pretty tricky road to navigate. However, we did partner with SIDN, which is the CCTLD for the Netherlands, in trying to make this more formalized, make this more concrete, saying what are the services you provide in the provision of TLDs or of domain names, what kinds of impacts could those have, and how can we assess them? So hopefully we'll be able to continue this research and then feed it back into the CCWP as a forum of discussion for, and also a place we, like you said, it's very hard to find information on ICANN websites. It's very splintered the way that these conversations happen. They happen in pockets, and even though they might be directly related, we might never see each other. We're passing in the night. So the CCWP could offer a place for all of the people who want to consider how to incorporate human rights impact assessments, how to discuss human rights impacts more broadly, to come together, share research, share best practices, centralize on how to move this forward, and then go back to their respective pockets.
Thanks. We'll have Fartani, or do you want to finish this?
Just to say that in the context of privacy impact assessments, which many countries, they're mandatory now, and in the context of regulatory impact assessment that accompany legislative drafting for in parliamentary regimes, there is a drill that you go through. So, for instance, if I'm bringing in a regulation, then I have to do a human rights impact assessment according to the national charters. So, again, you're not going to find that in the ICANN website. But there's nothing really earth-shattering about this. And we can just blithely act like ICANN follows the rules on these things. You know?
Hi, Farzan Abedi speaking. I just wanted to say that if you could kind of engage with NCUC and NCSG more about your work and if you need help with volunteers, I think it would be good that we both have this kind of two-way road, that we get update from you and then we can also update you from our work. I understand that this is a cross-community working party, so you have to consider all the other community members, I suppose, but if we could get more updates, and also we are working a lot on privacy at the moment, so if we could, just to support what Stephanie said, if you need help with that, and or if you want to bring Stephanie to say something. I mean, I don't want to put more work on Stephanie because she's already exhausted, but just to say a couple of words, because I think in the CCWP there are other members of the community, and then that would be another avenue for NCSG to talk about privacy.
Well, so the NCSG is one of our biggest and most vocal supporters in supporting freedom of expression, privacy, etc. We are having a session tomorrow morning at 8:30. If anybody wants to come and continue the conversation, it's going to be an hour and a half. So we have a lot to talk about. And there are other members from other constituencies that are and other parts of the community that are coming as well. And we really need to... It's important to stress the value. I think this is something that we all agree upon in this room. But remember to take this outside and to be talking to other people and expressing your concerns and your desire to move this forward to other parts of the community.
As many of you will have noticed, there's a heck of a lot of conflicts in these policy meetings because we're trying to pack so much on the agenda. If we could have a little Slack channel between the privacy and human rights, then we can goof off and follow you silently, of course, and maybe send you some messages over Slack. I think that might be a really good approach to this, because we do that sometimes, you know, particularly in the GNSO meetings. We have a council channel on Slack, so we can go, okay, what next, guys? And I think that might help.
Do we have time for one more?
Wait, this is Bruno for the record. We can even form a channel on the exact work that you're doing just so people can join you on the Slack. So.
Yeah, and if we could have focal points from each SO and AC to kind of bring their perspective in as well, kind of have a task force to see how we can move this out, that would be really useful.
Moving on, we have two more. Claudio and then Anna. Yeah. So.
May I? I was just going to stress the thing that you said is very interesting, because it's really the first time that such an impact assessment is drafted, directed to digital rights in that sense, right? And then the privacy impact assessment that Stephanie and Fazi referred to can really be good tools. And I was remembering part of an update to you also that the Internet Universality Indicators Project that has been developed by UNESCO might be another interesting input. It is broader, of course, in scope, but there are points that touch the DNS system, and the evidence is that in ICANN in Abu Dhabi, we had a session with Guy Berger concerning internet universality indications. I think Nigel Hickson promoted, and I was at the session. Me and Martin, I remember we were there, and we noticed the lack of connection between internet universality indicators and SDGs. We highlighted that on a comment. The comment was taken. It's in the draft. We did in our personal capacities because it wasn't something directly connected to DNS. So, but the comment is incorporated there. And I think this is another connection that we could explore as a source for the work that Colleen is. I'm definitely willing to learn and engage a bit more in that.
I'm Anna. I'm a fellow. So apart from the human rights impact assessments, would the framework of interpretation also include things like enforcement mechanisms and remedies where some process that already exists is violating, say, the right to privacy or free speech or anything like that?
So the UNGPs are formed of these three pillars, which is that states have the obligation to respect human rights, companies have the obligation to protect human rights, and then both have the obligation to remedy human rights violations. So I think that would be the natural thing that would follow once we have kind of mechanisms in place. First, we need to develop mechanisms to kind of assess potential impacts, but I think remedy would be the really natural subsequent step. After we kind of get this ball rolling in each SO and AC, then there could be a process. You could envision a process of trying to suss out how, once potential impacts have been identified, what kind of mechanisms you could develop to remedy that.
Thank you very much, everyone. Rafiq, do you want to do your comment right now?
Yeah, it's okay. So I just wanted to maybe a historical background. It's that it's not just NCAG is a contributor. It's we are the structure that supported from the beginning the cross-community working party and that to introduce to the other stakeholder group and constituency and to introduce that time the people to different leadership and also give that in-kind support for the meetings request and to organize the call. So that's quite important. It's not just one of the contributors. We are really the supporter for the CCWB. So that's why I agree with Farzana is about getting more updates as what's going on and so on, so we can help better. Myself, I can take the blame. I kind of disconnected in what's happening lately in the working party. So,
this is Bruna for the record. Moving on to transparency, we'll have Michael on the floor right now.
Hi, everyone. Michael Karaniklis for the record. Just to discuss some of the transparency issues that we've been dealing with. Transparency is something that we keep hearing every ICANN meeting. Everybody says how much they love transparency. Transparency is such a core value. It's so important to all of us. That rhetoric is very, very popular. As a result of how often that phrase gets thrown around, it's really important to engage and actually push for strong transparency standards and for people to practice what they preach. So I'm going to divide this kind of quick introduction to what's going on into two kind of baskets. One of them involves access to information and ICANN's response to information requests, and the other one is about open data and the information that they're pushing out there. So if you want to think conceptually, of all the information that ICANN holds, there's some data that they push out there proactively and they put on their website and they deliver automatically as soon as it's generated or at regular intervals. And then there's the rest of the information which is sitting inside but is potentially accessible if you file a request. And I'll start with that latter basket and the requesting system because that's where there's been more progress and is easier to deal with. So I'll start with a quick question just to get a sense of the room. who here comes from a country that has an access to information law? Good. It's 80% of the countries in the world, so a lot of hands going up. ICANN has its own version of an access to information or right to information law. It's called the DIDP, the Documentary Information Disclosure Policy. And it was designed in some ways based on national level access to information systems, but there are some divergences as well. So you have heard a little bit previously about Workstream 2. You will hear subsequently a lot more about Workstream 2. But one of the main tracks of Workstream 2, which was a policymaking process to reform certain key issues at ICANN, was transparency. And within that, the main area of focus of the transparency subgroup was to improve the documentary information disclosure policy, to improve ICANN's right to information framework. I was the rapporteur of that subgroup. Originally, when I started with that subgroup, I was paired. My co-rapporteur was a VP from 21st Century Fox, which, again, is I like to bring up because it's kind of illustrative of you know, strange bedfellows and how ICANN can push you into very unusual alliances or collaborations. And actually, when that person was left, I ended up working closely with someone from the U.S. Council for International Business. So again, as somebody with a pure digital rights activist background, those are weird collaborations, but we both agreed on the transparency side, so we were able to get some good work done. Essentially, through the Workstream 2 process, we developed some very strong recommendations for reform based on very best practice that are found in strong national laws around the world, taking examples from India, from Mexico, from Serbia, from strong right to information systems that have been passed at the national level, and we use those to build in recommendations for reform. Those recommendations have now been wrapped up as part of the Workstream 2 process, and they're before the board right now. So that reform process is basically almost done. There's not a huge amount of area for intervention. However, and I will also say, kind of building on something that I mentioned when we had our outreach sessions over the weekend, the fact that within, I guess, about a year, we've gone from starting the Workstream 2 process to developing these recommendations, and now in the basically on the edge of getting these recommendations implemented, which it's going to take, which is not quite a sure thing, but is almost there because it's really at the very end of the process. That's an indication of the level of impact that you can really have at ICANN. And I know I've heard that it's an atypical example of how quickly we were able to do that. But as somebody like me who started getting involved in ICANN, I think in 2015, to jump into a process like this and then immediately start to impact change, that's really cool as an activist. And somebody that came at, I've been involved in other access to information campaigns that have gone for years and years and years. My previous organization was trying to get an access to information law passed in the Philippines for about 8 years, unsuccessfully. Spain, Sri Lanka took well over 5 years to get that law passed. Pakistan, we've been trying to get law reforms there for 8 or 9 years now. So as an activist, I'm very used to banging my head against the door again and again and again and again and again before it opens. And, you know, Workstream 2 was maybe an exceptional example in ICANN, but I do like to show that it is an example of how you can really impact change and get policy because of how the multi-stakeholder process works. You really can feed policy positions into the process and see them through. So it's really cool. So the Workstream 2 recommendations for the DIDP for ICANN's access to information system are almost passed. They're very strong. The one area, so there's not a lot of engagement to be done there specifically, although I would encourage everybody in this room, go to the DIDP website and file a request. If you want to know information, file a request. Get that system moving. Make them have to implement it properly because that's key to the system's success. The one area involved in this that we didn't get and that remains a topic of discussion is transparency at ICANN Legal. ICANN has their own counsel, And a very common complaint that we were hearing from the beginning was that there's a lot of opacity on how that functions and that attorney-client privilege gets applied to a lot of information that ICANN has that is of critical interest to the community. We had a lot of intense battles on that specific issue in the working group, and it's probably the only area where, at the end of the day, we didn't come out with a very strong recommendation. Where we ended up was with the recommendation for there to be another process specifically on transparency at ICANN Legal, and there was also a minority position, which was part drafted by Robin, essentially providing some additional recommendations. So that issue is very much open and is still being discussed, and that's a major area of engagement going forward. And as the Workstream 2 recommendations get move towards implementation, and we see that conversation ongoing, that's going to be an area of further engagement. I can't tell you at the moment exactly how to get involved, because we're kind of in that weird situation where the recommendations are wrapped up, we're waiting for them to be approved, and then we'll move on to the next phase in the process. But when that starts up, there's going to be a huge amount of scope for intervention. And again, it's an interesting opportunity to collaborate with people that maybe you wouldn't naturally collaborate with. So that's the access to information side. The other basket to talk about is open data, proactive disclosure of information. ICANN has two initiatives ongoing right now, the Open Data Initiative and the Information Transparency Initiative. There's an awesome session discussing both of them tomorrow at 10:30, 10:30 to 12 in the main ballroom, which I'm going to be chairing, and I have a lot of prep to do for that. But the point is they've got these two initiatives that are ongoing to basically revamp ICANN's website, their open data offerings, everything about how they deliver information to the public. So we heard complaints about accessibility. We heard complaints about how difficult it is to get the information that you're looking for. This hits to the heart of that. This is what ICANN is supposed to be doing to remedy that problem. So are they doing a good job? Are they not doing a good job? Do these initiatives have what people are looking for in terms of that boost to accessibility? Come and have your voice. And seriously, if you were as part of that discussion, we're going to get updates from both the ODI and the ITI in terms of what they've been doing and what the final stage of what the final product is supposed to be looking at. Make yourself heard as to whether you're satisfied with that, whether you want it to go in a different direction, whether there's different things that need to be addressed. Because fundamentally, these are initiatives that need to be pushed forward by community engagement. So tomorrow's session is an excellent opportunity. Go check out the website now, read up on the background of what they're doing, and come prepared to say, I'm happy with this, I'm not happy with this, I want this to be prioritized, particularly going forward as we're seeing budget cuts. If this is something that people want to see prioritized, they have to hear it from the community. So tomorrow's session is a good example for that, and there's potentially going to be further examples as these initiatives move forward. And I'm already seeing hands start to go up, so I'll stop talking there and open it up for questions.
Thank you very much, Michael. We will have Stephanie.
Thanks very much. That's a great update on what you've been doing, and this is great work. I got a question and a comment. The question is, and thank you for circulating the results of your last DIDP, and if other people are firing them in, we'd love to see them. At least I would. I'm curious. But it looked like ICANN was actually crafting a document to respond to your request, which is a deep concern. I'm an old ATIP coordinator, you know? I know that trick. You're not allowed to do that. So your comments on that would be appreciated. And I don't want to sound overly cynical, because once I get going on the RDS, I can get really, really depressing. But there's a lot of steam behind this, and part of the reason that there are some unlikely candidates in there pushing for it is because these two values, privacy and openness, are often in contention, and if they can prove that it is the fundamental gestalt of ICANN that we are open and that we have full transparency, it acts against the ability to protect registrants' rights in the privacy fight. So I just want you to make you aware that if you hear me droning on about that, it's not that we don't want transparency, we just don't want another pile of ammunition against us in these fundamental purpose of ICANN arguments. Do you follow what I'm saying?
So on that DIDP response, I also noticed that they didn't say, here's our documentation. They came out with an answer that was like 4 or 5 pages long. They took 30 days to respond. They used the DIDP currently says they have to respond within 30 days, and they took the entire time period. Well, but it's incredibly inefficient to respond that way, and you know this what the typical response on the government side should be when you get an access to information request in, is they say, okay, find the documents that are responsive, redact out sensitive information. So if there's privacy stuff or commercially sensitive stuff, fine, redact all that out. Here's 50 pages of our documentation. Feel free to wade through it at your leisure and get a sense of how our policymaking process worked. Just for context, the request was about the selection process for fellows for ICANN 62. Sorry? The regional, yes, fellows. So it's incredibly inefficient that they responded that way, because it takes way more time to draft a 6 or 7 page document than to skim through 40 or 50 pages of appropriate documentation with a black marker and then scan all that stuff. So they took longer to respond. And it does suggest that the DIDP is not working the way that it's supposed to work. Because fundamentally, the point of information transparency laws, the point of these information requests, is to provide unfiltered information. ICANN can put out a press release saying, we did X and Y and Z, here's how everything we do is awesome, right? That's what governments do, that's what ICANN does, that's the normal thing that an institutional does. And the point of the information law is supposed to be, you get to cut through that filter and find the actual documentation showing the process, and you can make your own judgments as to whether it's been good or bad or weak or whether there's other things that need to be done. If ICANN is coming back with new press releases in response to a DIDP, that's a fundamentally problematic approach. It's inefficient, but it also does not properly serve the function that the DIDP should be doing. Now, that's a policy question that's not really listed in the letter of the DIDP. So that's not in the recommendations. But that is certainly something to follow up on. That's another reason why it would be great to get more people filing DIDP requests, because I would like to know, do they do this every time they get a request in? And that also would explain something about why they're complaining about resource allocation, because they're doing this in a way that requires 20 times as many resources as it should. But is this something they do every time, or were they a little more careful because they know that I'm the rapporteur for transparency and so they want whatever? Did that affect the process? Something like that.
I would argue you need to get the documents. And, you know, here's a confession. I'm a total pack rat. I have an entire box of disclosures from the Canadian procurement department that basically does contracting, because it is remarkable what you get. You're not going to get contracts from ICANN, I bet. And I would like to offer that I can cull through my collection and show you exactly how transparent governments are. And this goes for the obviously I'm a Canadian, not an American, but the same thing in the United States. This is in the trade agreements now. Like you got to be able to know how your governments are spending money. And I think we should be demanding the same kind of results here.
There is an open contracting recommendation in the Workstream 2 transparency report. So we'll see where that goes. It has to be done in fairly broad terms, because open contracting, it's a big policy to develop, but there is an open contracting recommendation in there. So that is also going to be a conversation that's going to be happening. I do also want to respond on what you mentioned in terms of the privacy versus transparency thing, because, you know, as somebody who's been active on both sides of that, as you have, I think that there's less conflict on those two, or less direct conflict, because fundamentally I see personal privacy as an exception to access to information where you redact that out and then you deliver the rest of the documentation. It's a fairly straightforward thing. But the problem comes in, that debate does get misused a lot. And we heard it most recently, I think it was yesterday, or whenever the GDPR session was, where somebody from the IPC stood up and said, well, you know, fundamentally, we believe in transparency for the WHOIS database. That's not transparency. That's not what transparency means. And it was infuriating, as a transparency activist, to have that argument appropriated in that way. So I do think that it's very important to understand the conceptual distinction, because transparency doesn't mean, transparency is not this blanket term that just says it's a free-for-all and everybody gets access to everything. There are that's an incredibly radical understanding of the term that's totally out of step with functionality, what transparency advocates talk about, which is having managed systems of access that respect legitimate rights, including privacy. And so I don't see an actual tension there, but I do see it being very important to frame the debate properly and to push back when we hear those kinds of misappropriations.
Trust me, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I push back, but they're very good at ignoring me. And, you know, if you, and now, I'm not trying to draft you here. Oh, yes, I am. If you join the RDS working group, then I could send you a Skype. Michael, they're talking about transparency. I have hollered bullshit for the last hour. Would you kindly just pop up and, you know? This is how we have to work, because we're understaffed, you know? We really are.
I can make myself, I can't commit to being a very, very active participant, but I can make myself available for summons under those circumstances, definitely.
Give yourself as a fireman, you know?
Thanks. So we're moving. Aiden, do you still want to make your comment? We're being kicked out, and we should have been kicked out of this room already.
I can keep it really short, just to 15 seconds. I just wanted to say that my understanding was that all requests that are received pursuant to the documentary information disclosure policy are published on the ICANN website along with the response. So maybe we could take a look through those other requests that have been submitted to see how they respond. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
So thank you very much, everyone. We're adjourning this meeting for now. Unfortunately, we weren't able to have Rafiq speaking on the AWS2, but hopefully we'll address this issue during the second part of the meeting in the afternoon. Thanks, everyone. We can stop the recording.